Welcome, guys.
All right, here we go.
Thank you.
Man, there's always a little technical. That's my fuck up because at the very beginning there, but no big thing. Well, it's good to see you again, man. I know this is your second time here.
Yep. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and then, Jonathan, you've been here so many times, right? But yeah. It's like a second home for you, man.
This is absolutely.
Which is great. I love that you do your show here, and you've been having some interesting conversations on your show, People First, so everyone could pay attention to that. And then I like having conversations with you guys because, Alberto, you know what's going on with us. Like body wise and what we do. And unfortunately, as human beings, we keep doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons. And then we just let it go going, it's not going to really be a problem later on, but it's going to be a problem later on.
Yeah. And it was kind of like something I think I might've mentioned quickly and briefly in the last episode we did was that a lot of times people just wait till it gets so massively debilitating for them. Like, right. Okay. Now I got to get it addressed. And that obviously then makes the recovery process even longer, right?
Yeah.
So it's about, hey, the moment we can identify an issue, right? And that's sort of respective to sort of every facet, not just in sort of a physical sense within our bodies too, right? It could be mentally in the nutrition side of things, right? And then obviously in the physical side of things, so then, right, let's get it addressed quicker. It won't take as long in terms of kind of treating that and getting better.
What I honestly would say, a lot of the tradespeople that I do talk to, they are paying attention to it. They're conscious of it. You know, they're probably toning down their alcohol consumption. They're being aware of what they're eating. We know fast food and all the other crap is bad. And so that's what this show is going to be about. We want to just highlight certain things. You guys want to take it for whatever it's worth. And I always say, listen, it's your body. You do it. And if it works well for you, then great.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I look at it, right? But it's something that's important that you need it because you are going to, I've always said you have a perishable career option as tradespeople. You can physically get hurt. You can get mentally hurt. And if you don't do anything about it and prepare for it, then it could be bigger problems later on, right?
Yeah. And there's so many different things we can do, right? And, you know, as we kind of then sort of get into the different topics that we'll come into today, right? It's always easy to where people always say like, what could I do? And like, is this supplement good? Or I heard about like this, you know, red light or this or that. Whatever quick gag there is, it's like quick. I'm like, it's not always quick. And like they always ask like, what's like the deep details on this? Or what do you know about this? It's like they want the inside scoop. And I'm like, let's just step back a bit and like, instead of trying to get so granular on these small things, is let's just get the lowest hanging fruit, right? Like, it's like, what benefit are you going to get from this one small thing, even if there is some effectiveness to it, right? Maybe, yes, it'd be obviously ideal, but like, listen, are you sleeping well? Are you getting 8 hours or 6 hours or whatever it is, right? Or is your eating habits like pretty good for whatever it is good is for that individual, right? Yeah. And so it's like, are you exercising, right? So like, are you doing this stuff first, right? Then trying to worry about the small little benefit you might get from a supplement or whatever adjunct of therapies you're trying to do, right? So it's understanding the sort of magnitude of effect, right? Yeah. So obviously these simple things will have a larger effect than trying to get so granular on the small things. Like, right, let's just change our perspective a little bit in our approach that this will have way more of an effect and it's the easiest thing we can do, right? And so just changing the narrative to a degree, right?
So let me do a few shout outs. I got Ivan's Ironclad Brotherhood cap I'm wearing on today. I just want to do a shout out to Jonathan's latest.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, thank you so much for the copy there. So The Adventures of Buttercup and George. Thank you. And your son wrote this, which is great. And I love the illustrations. So if anybody's interested, you can go to Amazon, right?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
And find it there. You. So Buttercup and George, search for meaning. So thank you for that copy. And then Alberto. So Premier Physiotherapy and Sports Medicine. What information you want me to share? You www.premierphysiotherapy.com.
Yep.
You can reach him at Alberto at premierphysiotherapy.com. And then the phone number is 905-417-9991. And then you're on social media too under the same handle, right?
Yeah, premier.physio on Instagram. So give us a check out and give us a follow. We've got some funny reels there. Like to have a bit of fun.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So where do we want to begin, gentlemen?
I think we should pivot right into what Albert was talking about early, just before this, which was we hear the adage of, I've tried this and it worked for me, so you should try it. Well, just because it works for...
I've never listened to anybody.
Just because it works for Jonathan doesn't mean it works for Manny or Albert or my mother, right? My mother, this is a real story, right? She came over the other morning, she's like, you take those vitamins. She's like, do they work for you? I'm like, I feel they work for me. I'm not going to suggest to you that this is going to work for you. Do the research. Attempt it, but don't just attempt it for a week and say it doesn't work. It takes time, folks. So I think, you know, you were just touching on that and it's worth digging into.
It's like, you know, as we, you know, a lot of people ask me too in clinic is like diet stuff, and it's to kind of pivot in the same sort of scenario from supplement to diet is that like oh, like, what do you think of this diet? Or someone said to me in clinic, oh, like, a friend of mine did this treatment. Like, does it work for this? And it's like, again, like to speak in metaphors, is just because someone had an issue and they did something for it, that was a treatment option specific to them that isn't necessarily applicable to you, right? So we need to understand what are the issues that you might be struggling with, right? And let's put a treatment option in place for those specific things. So kind of coming to a deeper root of understanding, because effectively, if someone changed a tire, but you have a car problem, but yet yours is an engine problem, we're going to change a tire just because someone else did it. It's kind of foolish when we kind of think of it like that, right? So, like, similar consensus, obviously different sort of metaphor just to kind of convey that message. But
I want people to understand that the word supplements.
Yeah.
It's a supplement.
Absolutely.
So fine. I know that a lot of men, when they get older, they want to increase zinc. They want to start getting into certain increases because they want to still maintain their testosterone, right? So that's what they want. But then they start taking an over amount of supplements and not realizing that you can catch, you know, you can eat zinc, you can find zinc in other forms of actual foods.
Yeah.
And that's what you should be focusing on too.
And that's where I was kind of coming to when I was talking about earlier. It's like, right, like, are we doing, so I get that question a lot too, right? Like, for different testosterone, different therapies for it. And it's one of those things where, again, like I was mentioning before, like, are we doing all the other things, right? Like, you know, right, like, what's our diet intake, right? Like, a protein amount intake, right? What's your sleep, right? Like, right? So if we don't have all of these under control, that will massively affect your testosterone, amongst other things as well, right? And so if that's not under control, that will affect it, and that will just naturally improve it. So if you, let's say, fix all of that, you'll have obviously an increase in different levels and different markers. All right, now when you then measure it from that point, are you still deficient in some stuff, right? Then we can explore, oh, you know, hey, maybe this, like a supplement like zinc might help you, or, you know, multivitamin of sorts, or whatever it is someone might be struggling with, right? Because if you'll see that if someone's not sleeping well, they're not eating well, there's other sort of factors in their life, and then they take supplement, they might notice a very, very small or marginal benefit and wonder like, oh, okay, well, maybe I need to up more. So they up more and it's not really seeing what they want. They get frustrated. Now they're like sort of uncertain in terms of how to approach or handle whatever it is they're trying to fix.
Those small movements, I find they're just the body reacting to something that you haven't been doing constantly.
Yeah.
Right. So if you start injecting a bunch of supplements, you're obviously going to have a difference in whether your urine or maybe certain strengths, or it might help you working out and exercising. But those are all secondary. They're not primary.
Exactly.
And I think that if you want to start increasing testosterone, exercise.
100%.
You need to get blood going through the muscles, right? Including that main muscle that you want, the reason why you want testosterone, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying from that.
Yeah, and there's like obviously a natural decline as we age, right?
Yeah.
So that's where kind of that conversation comes into play. So, you know, but if one of the things for longevity is maintaining muscle mass to its highest paramount, right? So, and that's where exercise comes in. And like we talked about supplements, that it's supplement to something, right? And that's where I was talking about the lowest hanging fruit is just get all of these simple things under our belt. No, like minimize your smoking, if not less than ideal to just be smoking in general, alcohol consumption, all of that massively in plays, inhibiting testosterone and other health markers as well, right? So, and that affects your sleep, and it's sort of a cascade, right? People always sort of focus on a supplement, but that's just like one small microcosm in a whole biological processes, right? A lot of times when people talk about the biology of something in terms of a supplement or an adjunct, they'll remove context of a biological process to kind of simplify it for people who might not know. This does this and increases this. Well, there's so many things in between that, and then how is the interplay of that in amongst everything else? And then this is where like a lot of this sort of health and supplement world and all of this stuff, it gets sort of a bit gimmicky, right? People try to kind of sell stuff and realize it not work. But there's so many different, you know, scientific sort of processes in between it, right? So like someone might supplement something but not realize, hey, this supplement works on an enzyme. Your enzyme doesn't increase, right? So you can have much more supply of whatever supplement, but your enzymes can't necessarily uptake all of that. So it's just a wasteful product, right? See, unless there's, you know, up to a minimum threshold, right? So a point of no return. So maybe if someone has a certain supplement that they're really low in, they can kind of reach it to a certain point. How do they know which one that is? Obviously, that's through conversation and testing.
See, I'm a kid of the 80s, right? So, like, me being in my 50s now, I grew up on bullshit like those electro pads on your lower back and your stomach, you get abs, mm-hmm. which is all bullshit.
Yeah.
Thighmaster from Suzanne Summers, you know, and all of a sudden you can build your legs. Bullshit. It was just like, there's always a gimmick, and we'll talk about the gimmicks that are going on today. And I think one of them might even be the red light, where people are 100%. Just, listen, taking their Christmas tree lights and they consider that's red light. That's not red light. You need to actually go through all this stuff. But I do want to say that nobody, as far as I know, ever wakes up 20 pounds heavier.
No.
It doesn't happen overnight. And the same thing is, you don't wake up 20 pounds more muscle. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a progress. But I want to ask you is, why is it that as you get older, it's so much more difficult to maintain that consistency of exercise? Like, your body just feels weaker. I get that you're older, but you're trying to still do, like, I think I maybe started noticing in my late 30s, you couldn't do the weight that you could do in your 20s. And then you start feeling defeated. So then you start doing less. And then now you start getting into more of a conditioning point, which I don't think is right. Is that right? Because you can get stronger even with age, right?
Yeah, absolutely you can, right? And so there's a couple of things to tackle within that question, right? So we do see, like, there have been studies and MRI samples of, like, someone, like a triathlon or marathon runner quad, like, muscle mass and bulk size to the equivalent of, like, when they're, like, in their 20s, right? So the misnomer that you can't or get stronger or lift more weight when you get older isn't true, right? Like, you see a lot of people kind of continuously increase their strength as they get older, right? But it all has to be structured and programmed appropriately, right? So kind of in the question you're asking, like, oh, when I was younger, I could do more. You can get away with more, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, as you get older, you can't, right? So as I always talk with people is that as you get older or you're trying to increase weight or do more intense exercise, if you don't have the sort of underlying fundamentals to go with that, you're, as you try to push more, you're going to be sort of highlighted in those deficiencies. And then that's where problems arise, where, like, you might feel uncomfortable, you might have some discomfort, you might start developing an injury, whatever it is kind of that's causing you from not necessarily going like you were when you were younger, right? Just when we're younger, we can get away with a lot because we're much more resilient, but it's not due to any sort of deeper physiological reason, right? Like, if you look at a lot of, like, world strength athletes, they get older, they get stronger, they're hitting PRs, right? So it's not that you can't get stronger as you get older, it's just you can't get away with more when you're older, right? So it's about understanding what these fundamental deficiencies are, right? And so, you know, that's kind of where we then sort of talk about breaking down the sort of specific requirements for whatever task you're trying to do. If it's a bench press or if it's a sprint or whatever it is, there's so many deep biomechanical requirements within that, that if you don't have that, right, then as you try to reach new PRs, you're going further without sort of that fundamental prerequisite, and then you're going to be exposed with discomfort, whatever, and then, yeah, like you kind of said, you start getting weaning on your mental side of things, and then, right, okay, you'll do less, or you get frustrated, so you stop, and then you get discouraged, or then even worse, you get sort of a bit of, like, an egotistical moment, and then you try to ego lift, and then you hurt yourself further, and now, you've really put yourself out of working out, and then you kind of spiral into a place where, yeah, you're not where you once were, under unhealthy conditions, behaviors, and then your discipline falls off, and now you're in a world.
So what are some of those fundamentals you're talking about, though?
So in which regard, sort of in a physical sense?
Yeah.
Or, so in a physical sense, for example, like, let's say one of my favorite things is, like, oh, no, now, like, it hurts when I go up or down stairs.
Okay.
Right? So, like, that's a quarter depth single leg squat, right? In especially downstairs. Now we talk about glute dominant versus quad dominant, so knee over toe, which has been another phenomenon, right? Which is, that's a good premise, but again, has to be prescriptive, right? And so it's about slowly introducing this. And this is where I talk about difficulties of progression, right? So often people say, like, oh, like 5 pounds of 10 pounds of 20, I feel stronger. I'm like, great, that's cute, but that's in a very elementary form of progression. Right. So one of the more difficult things, and this is where the kind of the physics or the biomechanics come into play, is that, right, another sort of deeper, intense level of progression is load through lengthened muscles. Right. So we mechanically disadvantage this muscle. Right. Whatever muscle it might be. Let's just say for fun, it's a bicep. In sort of this position here, it'll be super strong. It's in a mid portion. It's a short and a muscle contracts. It comes together. But if we mechanically disadvantage it and lengthen it, right? So you hear a lot about the negative stuff, right? That's kind of like the gym talk. It's an eccentric, so we're loading the tendons. This is where a lot of these soft tissue injuries come, because due to a mechanical insufficiency, right? So the load is too high for what they're able to do. So the torque will be higher in a lengthened position, so there's more force, right? And so, like, we'll talk about it in Newton meters as a level of force, right? So a lengthened position would be the sort of secondary type of level of progression, right? So in a quad dominant, going downstairs, that's why things tend to hurt people more when they go downstairs. It might not if they kind of overcompensate. And then, like, sort of a very, very high level form of difficulty is rate of contraction, so velocity, right? So usually people will say with quicker based movements, do they have pain? So if I were to talk about, let's just say, in a leg, right? And let's say body weight, for example, let's say an average person weighs about 600 Newton meters, mm-hmm. right? But then we add force to it, so velocity, right? And if they start sprinting, it could be 5x of their body weight, right? Versus if you just do a squat, it's 500 Newton meters. But now if you start running and then you have to decelerate and then decelerate, change of direction, then decelerate into a reactionary sense. So we had a cognitive load, right? So these are such deep levels of nuance. We, as a gen pop, would not necessarily understand or then relate to the tasks that sort of include this, but then not realize you don't have any of these levels.
Introducing Alt Labor Solutions, the game changer for contractors and laborers. Are you a contractor needing skilled labor, or have labor in need of quick shifts? Or how about buying, selling, or renting tools, material, and equipment? Connect easily with contractors and find resources hassle-free through Alt Labor Solutions online platform. Post job listings with project details, browse public resumes, and choose the right person for the job. Explore their job board for new opportunities and connect with top talent. Alt Labor Solutions revolutionizes the labor industry with a user-friendly interface, secure payments, and a supportive team. Visit them at altlaborsolutions.com and start connecting with other contractors today. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
And then that's where, like, sort of our job comes into place and slowly reestablish these things to get someone back to what they need to be doing, right? So trying to lift 5 pounds, or let's say, if in a squat sense, if my body weight's 500 Newton meters, or for easy math's sake, let's just say I weigh 100 Newton meters and I add, you know, 10 pounds. Great, that's a little bit of resistance. But now I want to go, well, let's go sprint and then play soccer, for example, or any other sport, tennis. I got to sprint and stop. Well, that'll be on one leg. So now you have that 500 Newton meters on one leg, or sorry, the 100 for this example, and then 5X. So five times, so that'd be 500 Newton meters,
yeah.
Right? So you can see how these levels of difficulties, and these are all these levels of intricacies that sort of we would all just take for granted but not realize are being involved in whatever ailment someone might be struggling with.
And that's the pain.
Yes, because
so, what are you doing? You're actually damaging the muscle? The pain is coming from the damaged muscle?
Not necessarily, right? So pain can come from different sources, right? So it, like, for example, I just had someone in clinic yesterday, shoulder pain, massively severe. And this is where we talk about the discrepancy of someone's scan and someone's issue. No one's scan, or like if you look at an MRI and then you look at a person, the two are never equate or correlate,
okay.
Right? So that, like, this gentleman has massive severe pain, but there's no tissue damage, right? It's just because there's a mechanical insufficiency, right? So his shoulder, he can't do, in this case, it was a subscapularis, so it's a deeper rotator cuff muscle, and he can't tolerate a form of load, which was basically the weight of his own arm against gravity in certain positions, especially more in outstretched positions, because now the load is higher, right? So we're stretching the tendon, we're asking it to work, so the force is higher, there's more torque. So, for example, he's fine in here. As we start stretching him out, the pain and the symptoms come on. And then he says, well, like when I play with my kids or I do anything quick, it hurts. Exactly. Especially out here because it's a quick movement, right? And so we'll even hear people, you know, it's not that bad. It's just when I go overhead or when I do something quick or when I quickly reach. I'm like, exactly. I'll bring into
these. There's limitations to what you can do with that body part, then there's an issue.
Yeah, but it's like to a scientific level, it's just a mechanical deficiency, right? So like let's just remove all the subjective stuff because it's objectively we're missing things. But it'll make sense as we apply it to what sort of their tasks are as they communicate to me, right? So if someone says, right, I'm okay when just kind of moving my arm around, but it hurts overhead. And then if I do anything quick, like I'm reaching or I'm throwing something. Well, yes. So you have like things that it's not that bad, but when we stretch that tissue and then we put a bit of load through it, well, we don't have that, right? So that's why the overhead stuff will hurt. And then they'll say like, oh, when I'm, let's say, throwing something, well, there's velocity now. So rate of contraction is higher, right? It's a quick movement. So, well, like, hey, you don't have the velocity-based stuff yet, so that will hurt you, right? And that'll be relatable to any other things they might be doing that sort of require those demands. And so until you achieve those things, well, only then will you be fine, right? Because the pain will be coming from an insufficiency from the tendon, right? So you're trying to lift something higher than it actually can. And then to go in a bit deeper with it, it's about force production. And I'll make a metaphor in the construction sort of world of it, is that let's think of a bobcat, right? And for the purpose of this example, let's just make sure make it a electrical battery operated bobcat. And it's the strongest steel this world's ever forged, right? The steel is not an issue. And this is where I talk about in clinic, it's more sort of in the neurological force production than it is tissue or muscle, right? I know we're going a bit of in a rabbit hole, but I'll come back to it in a sense with the metaphor, is that in the purpose of this metaphor, let's presume the steel is your muscle.
Okay.
And your nervous system is the battery and sort of the electrical output you can produce, the force. And you're trying to lift a 1,000-pound rock. And let's say the battery bank's only got 30%, you know, output. And to lift this 10,000-pound rock, you need 80% battery force production, right? Obviously, it can't lift it. You're going to try to lift it. What's the failure point? It's not going to necessarily be, you know, anything but the steel. And the steel will break or crack or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? That's where all the load will be going to. And so that's kind of in the same premise, how you can reflect it into someone's own body, right? Their tendon is kind of taking the load and, you know, it's causing pain because they can't lift whatever they want to be doing. Using the 10,000-pound rock, obviously a massive exaggeration to provide an illustration, but that's effectively what's going on, right? But people will take for granted their strength as being more than what it is, and the difficulty of task being like sort of easier than what it actually is. And so that sort of discrepancy or sort of disconnect is why people will have pain. And because they never understand it, they'll just continue on not understanding why they're
accepting
struggling.
Accepting different levels of pain, but exactly. It's increasing every so often.
Exactly.
It's the same whole idea of you don't wake up 20 pounds heavier.
Oh, yeah.
You're just taking more pain a little bit at a time every single week.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening too is it becomes into a sort of a behavioral pattern where it gets worse, where like you'll experience pain and in its normal innate behavior, if you experience pain, you're not going to reinforce a negative experience. So you're going to avoid doing it, using it. Let's say it's your shoulder, for example. You're going to avoid using your shoulder because you don't want it to hurt.
Yeah, you overcompensate.
Yeah, but like you'll avoid using it. So like if it's a soft tissue injury for the purpose of this example, right? But there's going to be a massive amount of deconditioning and weakening as that goes on. But you need your arm to do stuff. So you're only going to accentuate your problem. So what's going to happen is, well, it'll be painful again because you're not really getting it treated, right?
So yeah, I see a lot of the older guys doing that. I pay attention to older guys and the way they walk, the way they kind of get in and out of their vehicles or climb a ladder. Like there's certain pain points in their body structure and how they walk. Yeah. That you can see that they're masking something and they're not attending to it when they should be attending to it, right?
Absolutely. And in those like scenarios, right, with these types of workers, is that their jobs are very demanding, right? So there's a high physical requirement. And so unless you're ensuring you're able to attain those demands, you're effectively just going to increase a discrepancy of what you're trying to do, right? So like,
am I fair to say that the human body, the way it's designed, it's designed almost perfect, except for the vulnerability part of us being erect, right? As animals, you're protecting your gut, you're protecting your genitals, you're protecting everything. But design-wise, the way the arms are, the way the legs are, feet, you know, it's designed almost like a perfect machine. But then we start causing damage to it, which causes all these issues, right?
Not necessarily, right? So people always interpret it as like damage as that we get older. It's not, right? So, and this is where we kind of talk about the sort of behavioral components to it, right? Is that we're all effectively born with the ability to squat, but we lose it as we get older.
Yeah.
Right? So why, right? And so this is where like I'll use osteoarthritis as an example, because people interpret that with damage, wear and tear. Like these are just terms that aren't necessarily reflective of what's actually going on, right? And then how it's reflected in the behavioral sense. So for example, like when we say osteoarthritis, wear and tear, damage, protect it from the wear and tear over life, that's not necessarily accurate, right? our body goes through age-related changes that are normal, right? No different than we get gray hairs as we older, wrinkle on our skin. These are just normal age-related changes. And so joints, tendons, things like that, all forms of tissue undergo the same thing. And so there's a normal rate of age-related change, right? Now, within nuance, we can affect a lot, right? With exercise, diet, sleep, etc. But these become an issue when these age-related changes are progressive. So osteoarthritis, like, it's not a diagnosis as much as we kind of give it to be, right? Because we'll take a scan and it'll be like, you know, osteoarthritis, mild, moderate, severe. You know, severe, yeah, that's going to cause some pain and discomfort, right? But mild to moderate, like, by the time we're certain age categories or decades, like 50, 60, if we don't, we're a medical marvel, right? Mm. So we need to have, you know, perspective with it. And so these become a problem if we don't have the behaviors set in, right? So if our muscles aren't strong enough, if we're not adequately maintaining a sort of decent amount of tolerance for what we want to be doing, and a progressive age-related change like osteoarthritis is how we're going to start to have pain. But it's not because of damage and wear and tear. It's just because you're just simply not strong enough or haven't maintained enough lean muscle mass, right, to then maintain your strength to do whatever it is you need to be doing, and your body has to adapt, whether it be through muscle or otherwise, right? And so it's less about, you know, as we get older, damage. It's like, no, we're redoing all these things to limit ourselves from getting to that point of where we decline in our physical capabilities.
Is it possible to reverse it? You see these memes, see some videos of older people in their 60s, 70s starting out exercising, and then they start gaining muscle mass and they start being more flexible.
Yeah, so what I would say is, like, it's not necessarily reversible. You can reattain, right? So, like, if someone is, like, so far gone where, like, hey, they at this point they might need a joint replacement, or they got some other things that are so debilitating, they can regain to a certain point as much physical capacities probably within what they might be able to attain, right? If someone's fortunate enough that they don't have any sort of significant ailments medically or physically in a sense, then it's not a reversible thing, but yeah, you can absolutely attain it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That. There's, like, as I always say, like, there's nothing you can't really do unless obviously there's obvious limitations, right? It just means that there's more requirements you have to attain, and it'll just be a little bit longer for you to get there. But so long as you're disciplined and you stick with it, right? And sort of you have that discipline, which is kind of the main thing, you'll get there. And then within that, it's not like you have to do it every day. Like, it might be like some weeks are good, some weeks not so good. It's just over time, right? You trying to be habitually consistent.
This is interesting, right? Because this goes back to what you were talking about, construction, where we see older folks.
We all see it.
But what you're talking about, you know, they're covering up something that is ailing them, right? I think of, you see it all the time, somebody getting in and out of a vehicle or a machine. The way they get in and out changes over time, right? Mm-hmm. They might pivot this way and then drop their legs versus hopping out as you once were in your 20s, right?
Yeah.
And the mindset and the limiting belief is, I'm too old to do that and I have to deal with this, which is very different than the way you described. It's like, we're not going to, what was the word you used? You can recondition, or you can reattain.
You can
reattain.
Yeah.
And it's going to take discipline.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things too, where, like, we, you know, it comes in, I guess, to two facets. As you know, I've worked with a lot of the patient population within that industry, is that one of the limitations actually I hear a lot is, like, well, then they tend to work long hours, early morning, late hours, right? Okay, great. A lot of clinics, we're open late, we're open on weekends, right? Like, you can see us, and it doesn't mean that you have to come in three times a week. No, like, whatever you can do, right? Like, it's not.
But there's twofold there. You come in when you can come in, but then you're also getting educated, so then you can do things when you're not
exactly,
there.
Exactly, right? And so one of the main premise, like, that should exist, and it exists with us, is that when we're working with someone, it's about creating independence, not dependence on them, right? Like, get the hell out of the clinic, man. That's the goal. Like, you know, come. I always make the joke, like, listen, whatever it is we're working through, yo, get out of here, sign my wall, and then come back and say hi and have a coffee with me, right? And that holds true, right? But then another point is that, like, right, like, at what point do they value reattaining that sort of physical ability, right? Mm-hmm. So it gets a bit sort of specific to each individual. What do they value? Some people just don't value that. They just, quite frankly, don't care, right? So now we then, you know, we have to do a proper job in educating, right? Here's the value of it. And so if they can't see the value of it, then, yeah, then there's someone they just quite frankly don't care. But the more we can educate, then we can try to educate them on understanding the value for them to value it within themselves.
Here's one thing that I'm notoriously guilty for is I always hated stretching.
Yeah.
But now I'm paying for it, right? Because when I was younger, I used to train and I tried to stretch and I couldn't get all the stretching out of it. And then I wouldn't be able to reach certain points on my back. Now I can't reach them because I just can't get there. It's not because of muscle mass. It's just because of joint and I can't get there. But I know how important stretching is to the body, right?
So great question. Stretching, it can have its place of benefit, but again, let's sort of evaluate effects of change, right? So stretching will increase your neurological tolerance to a passive position, i.e. like if I'm trying to stretch a tricep, I'm holding it here at a certain point, right? I no longer feel it. Great. Now that's a passive sense. I'm doing it myself, right? But if you're saying, like you said, oh, I can't reach my arm behind my back, that's not passive, that's active, right? So now we're talking about mobility and joint stuff. It's not that joint stuff, the only way to actually like mobilize a joint is through movement, right? Mm. So mobility-based stuff, right, is gonna be a much better avenue for someone to kind of attain those benefits, right? Stretching can help, right? But like if I was to say, sort of prioritize a proportionate time to stretching as much as maybe some other stuff, I think we'll probably reevaluate that. It's not that stretching's bad. There's a place for it, but we need to be specific, right? So if we're talking about, you know, range of motion, mobility, if I was to give you an example, right, and I'll just use my arm again, if I'm trying to bring my hand closer to my shoulder and I do this, right? Okay, fantastic. I'm stretching my tricep, okay? And it's passive. Now I let this go and I got to go and up. Well, what am I effectively doing? I'm flexing my bicep.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with my tricep. Our body has what's called reciprocal inhibition, meaning we can't co-contract. So the simplistic nature of this is, right, I flex my bicep, my tricep has to relax. Otherwise, I wouldn't move my arm.
Yeah.
Right. So if I want to come up into this sense, I got to make sure this is pretty strong, right? I got to be able to have full control, right? So my bicep has to be strong in inner range, mid-range, and outer range. Mm. And I can have more mobility. Because I would, let's say, want to touch my shoulder or with my hand.
Yeah.
So does stretching my tricep necessarily be overly applicable to touching my shoulder? Not necessarily. In fact, not at all. Maybe someone who has very, very limited range of motion, they might have a history of some elbow dislocation or et cetera. Maybe, yeah, stretching might be a good way to sort of introduce them to, but then slowly, at the same time, also be working on active movement, right? So it's again to kind of maybe just understand the sort of imperative nature of what is required to sort of really help someone for a specific issue, range of motion, you know, joint stuff. You're going to get more from it moving it, right? And so you might want to start passively. Yeah, okay, now we have a bit more tolerance, right? Increase your neurological tolerance to being a bit more bent. But then, okay, now can you actively get there? Let's work in that actively.
It's the same thing with your legs too, right?
Absolutely.
You said it's true. It's very true. I know for a fact, my accountant, I don't think he's done a squat probably in 30 or 40 decades, or 40 years, right? That's affecting him.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. And sitting and standing from a chair or a toilet, yeah, that's a squat right there, right?
Stop being chained to your construction company. That's what Revelate delivers to contractors like you who are trying to figure out AI and automations. I hear it all the time with guys I talk to, and it sounds like they spend way more time on things that waste money. Here's how Revelate does it. They study your business. They build custom AI software and automation tech to fit your process. They train you and your staff so you can save 50% of your time on the stuff that slows you and your projects down. You got into the trades to build things, not to be buried under endless admin work and broken systems. I know every day feels like you're solving the same problems instead of moving forward. That's why Revelate was created. They grew up in the construction industry and have been a part of it for more than 15 years. They know the grind and they work to fix it. Within weeks, you and your team and your business are saving half of your time on the stuff that keeps you from getting home and enjoying life. No more nights buried in the paperwork, just more time building and living. Stop being stuck in chaos. And right now, they're offering 25% savings on all new projects if you sign up before the end of the year. Let Revelate help you build something better. Book a demo. It's an easy chat and it's free. Book time now. www.revelate.com or on IG at revelate.inc or call them at 416-474-5755. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
It's an assisted mindset squat. You know that
you
either landing, it's whether it's going to be a soft land or a hard land. Right. That's at that point, right? Yeah.
And it's like when I'm in clinic, it's always funny too. When I get someone to like squat on something lower than they think they can do. And I'm like, all right, just stay. Like I don't even get them to say, I don't even say a squat. I'm like, okay, just stand here. And then you just sit down and they sit. And it's like the funniest thing in the world. And I'm like, it's just once they kind of know like, oh, it's an exercise squat. I can't squat. Get the
training wheels out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's always funny. People in clinic will always argue for their limitations more than anything. And it's like, like you can do this. Like you do this in your everyday life. Like I'm just now kind of, you know, isolating it and making it a very abstract orientated goal for you. So now you're kind of looking and focusing on the goal and sort of that aspect more than the actual just movement and not realizing you do this in your everyday life.
I do mine in the shower in the morning. Class, I go right back down and I do it with my eyes closed because I want to get balance as well too. Even though I know where the grab, not the grab bars, the hand shower bar is, like I still do it so then I can go all the way down as low as I possibly can, but I'm not doing it looking for pain. I'm doing it because I want to just wake up at that moment.
I think you're just looking to see a physio. Eyes closed in a shower, slippery floor. This guy just wants to see a physio. What I'll keep saying is like, keep doing that, Manny. You know where we're located.
There's a drain there. It's totally fine. There's a drain there. I won't drown. Right?
He wants to exfoliate his feet as he like slips and slides on the drain.
I'll go in with that call. What's that thing? I fall in and I can't get out. I'll go in with that one, man. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point.
No, I hope not.
But I do that because I strongly believe that your quads are so important to your body, right? And we've seen it. As you get older, they get smaller. Like I used to have, like they used to call them like oak trees, right? They were like 24. Mm-hmm. And I'm like going, this is insane how, you know, they're pretty fucking big at that point. And then you could also feel the strength that's coming out of them when you were lifting things up.
Yep.
Like you're using the proper body movement. Right. And then you're not using your torso to lift things up. You're using your legs to lift them up. And then those are the biggest muscles in your body.
Absolutely.
Right.
And point taken, it's something that you're absolutely spot on. And so a lot of back-related nature injuries is that people will have this pseudo-understanding of hip extension versus low back extension, right? And so it's such a nuanced difference that people don't necessarily know, understand, or even aware of, right? Like a lot of what sort of we'll have to undergo is that like just teaching them stuff, right? And so like you said, you know, are we using our legs and then we're starting to use our back, but people don't know the difference, right? Like to kind of really teach them how to disassociate their pelvis from their low back, right? Have movement through each level of their spine, this segmented mobility, right? And so it's about trying to attain movement. And then while you have movement, then put strength. So we introduce different complexities within that, right? So obviously, do this type of movement, learn it, understand it. Okay, how can we add a complexity to it that reflects what they want to do, whether it's in a construction line of work, if it's an everyday sense, right? And then to your point is that if we stop doing that, you know, you're going to lose the abilities that you once had, right? So it's making sure you're consistent with it throughout life, right? That's where then the deconditioning happens. And the effects of deconditioning happen really quickly. Like even within 2 days, if you were to see like tissue of like, let's say a tendon of a muscle after 2 days of deconditioning, instead of like a nice dense striation, like you'll quickly see it start to kind of squiggle a little bit, right? So, and that, you know, the more formidable your tissue is, the stronger and more resilient it is. But if there's a deconditioning phase to it, right? Like, well, obviously it's going to be less resilient. And that's when sort of these things can arise.
So what does that actually mean? Like if the muscle deconditions, does that mean it's that much more of a mountain to climb back up? So do we want to keep it in a certain state of mind all the time? Like a state of condition?
Yeah, you kind of like, so like, in short, you always want to be conditioning it, right? Introducing any form of stimulus of load, right? Load can be exercise. Okay. It could be a sport. It could be a hobby, whatever it is for that individual, right? But in knowing too, in periods and moments of life that things come up that, right, you can't be necessarily doing it. So, right, just kind of be continuous. But yeah, you always want to be in a constant state of low. So there is no forms of deconditioning.
Hang on. Can we stick on the quad muscle for a second?
Absolutely.
Because I think, you know, that was a good... Walking is not considered load?
So, like, walking is load. Everything is load, to be honest with you. Okay. Everything you do in a 24-hour period is load, right? Now, you know, the requirements or intensities of load will be higher, right? Just walking in itself, it's an activity. For some, it might be an exercise. But for some, it is exercise, they have had such deconditioning that for them is exercise,
okay,
right? And let's just go with a patient population of people who don't have any sort of underlying medical incidences or morbidities that might sort of induce that outside of their own control, right? So if someone, let's just say, is now currently finding walking as exercise, there's a significant state of deconditioning, right? Walking is great activity. Absolutely do it. Increase it as much as possible. That's absolutely paramount for health benefits, right? But if we're talking about exercise, like exercise is something that needs to elicit something a bit more than in terms of intensity, right? So for some, it might be walking, right? But that's because their deconditioning is so progressive that that is now considered exercise to them. But for the gen pop, for the masses, that's activity.
I'm asking because we live in a society right now where, you know, steps. Everybody's, I got 10,000, 20,000 steps. It's a very common narrative. How many steps did you... And, you know, that I wanted to bring that into the equation.
Yeah, which is great. Like, it kind of like, sort of like what I was saying, like it's great activity. It has great health benefits, right? You're increasing your activity. Like that's your caloric expenditure. Great. By all means, fantastic. But now if we talk about intensity of load, very, very minimal, right? Like there's... You know, we're not.
Your body's going to get used to it eventually.
Well, it will, right? Yeah. Like, let's say maybe if you got deconditioned to a point that right now walking was sort of a pinnacle for you, great. Now, like you've sort of stopped, right? But the intensities that, and maybe that's the only maximum amount of intensity someone really wants to get to, fantastic. But you know, like I always say this, like at the end of the day, a bag of potatoes at a grocery store is 10 pounds. You got to lift 10 pounds, right? Mm. If you're bringing in groceries from the house and you're trying to bring two bags each hand, like no shot, you're not telling me that's like not 10 pounds each side or something like that, right? So clearly like our life will demand some form of intensity of load that we need to make sure that we can sustain and maintain. Otherwise, you're just quite frankly deconditioning, right?
Got it.
So yeah, ideally you would want something a bit more intense. It doesn't have to be a formal structured exercise. Like it could be, that's where I think another conversation too that comes into play is that if someone likes playing a sport, it could be tennis, squash, badminton, someone, it could be dance. It could be whatever form of exercise for any one person. It doesn't have to be structured workouts in a gym, lifting weights. Right. So
no, but it can be a single leg squat. It can be a squat in a shower. It can be something that's
maybe just, not a shower, but
well, it's something that's actually.
Listen, I haven't fallen, and if I have, I'll get back up.
Fair enough. Fair play.
But I want to get into we're human beings, and I honestly am seeing. I want to get into drugs.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just where I personally am seeing. I don't know the cause and effect of it just yet, but I'm seeing it through photographs. I think there's an Ozempic fucking pandemic going on. Mm. I think there's just an abuse of it going on. And I think people are just like, this is the best thing ever. I'm losing weight and I'm feeling better mentally maybe. But I don't know if you want to touch upon about that, but it's also, I want to talk about a lot of people rely on supplements that are borderline drugs, right? Yeah. And then they're using those to help them physically get better. But are they really doing that?
So it's twofold, right? It always comes down to the context of an individual, right? So it's not a short answer of yes and no.
Yeah.
So we have to understand that. So there's a place for it where its implications lies that if someone's really struggling in sort of a mental side of things to really get going and sort of undertake maybe some of the lifestyle behaviors that really are going to help them and are the more long-term resolutions for them that are healthy behaviors, that it just might be a hard start. They might have some other you know, comorbidities or underlying medical conditions that might really struggle for them to kind of get going. Okay. It's a good Kickstarter, right? Like it's an instant gratification. It's something that they can do where it's sort of passive in nature, right? It's sort of a quick sort of undergoing kickstart. It can help them get motivated and then lead them into sort of a healthy behavioral sort of place. The sort of side that, again, that gets twisted on is that it can get easily taken advantage of, right? That will then be seen as, oh, it's a quick fix. That's all I need to do, right? And so if that's our mindset with it, that's a very dangerous one, right? Because now it's like, well, I'm not going to have autonomy or any internal locus of control of what's going on. So I'm going to externally rely on this to take all my issues away.
Yeah.
And then that's where it's dangerous, right? Where like, that's not what it's meant for. There's an implication for it to help a certain population, right? But if then we start in getting sort of greedy with it and saying, oh, I'm just going to do this and that's what it's going to do because aesthetically just weight loss and then that's all I want and then I'm not going to undertake any of the other healthy behaviors that we need to sort of make sure we're sustaining, right? That's probably what's got us there in the first place,
right?
So it's sort of understanding its implications where like, yes, for some, it's a good place for us to kind of get them going and get them started to help them come into a healthy place, right? Whereas then let's, for those who just trying to do it in a quick fix and sort of
we're just in a quick fix society.
Oh, 100%.
Everybody's this way, right?
Yeah, 100%.
They want to meet their ideal physique by a certain point, right? Which is unrealistic for most people.
And I make a common joke is that patients are called patients because it requires patience. Like, you know, it's
true.
Yeah, right. And so, but anything, you know, it's, and then again, that conversation of education has to happen, right? Are we formally in giving people the full informed scenario of stuff, right? Hey, this is what this looks like in a healthy sense. This is what we can expect, right? If someone's undergoing that, okay, right, this will be a bit more rapid at the start. We'll probably do it for X amount of time. And then we're going to kind of wean away from it to undergo the healthy things that, right, this is where we're going to now have you, right?
Right. And I don't know if that education occurs. It becomes a dependency. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, not, when we're talking about, you know, the drug side of things, it's just a dependency where it's, the way you're unpacking it is, this kickstarts it, and great to start. Now let's sort of get into that, those habits and those rituals to maintain and or progress.
Yeah, and fundamentally, like, if we're all just undergoing healthy lifestyle behaviors, right, of sort of, again, the simple things that we've said is that, that's fundamentally going to just make sure our lowest exposure to of risk to any form of health, you know, diseases or otherwise is to a minimum. It doesn't mean we can prevent. That doesn't exist. But we can minimize risk. And that's all we're all looking for at the end of the day, right?
Well, you're getting a lot of people. Obviously, I touched upon the red light.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine Amazon's having a field day with that because you're getting all kinds of third-party sellers on Amazon selling different kinds of red lights. But they're specific there, but everybody just looks for a quick fix to take care of everything that's going on.
Exactly.
But that's not what it's about.
No. And it can't be, like, you know, it's that's why the conversation is so challenging is because you have to kind of reorientate their perspective, right? Is that like, okay, I want this quick fix, or I heard about this, it's quick. And it's like, no, here's what you're looking for. Here's what this actually is and what it looks like. And here's how we're going to actually help you. And, you know, it's not that it's not fixable, like assuming it's not, right? But it's not going to be quick. And so then you have to then converse with them. Like, this is what it's realistically going to look like. Here's how it can have an up or a down in relation to what's going on. And so if they can have as much formal education of a realistic expectation, then they'll be more likely to sort of stick to whatever it is they're trying to attain. And if they don't have that, that's where the frustration sets in. Oh, this isn't working. I thought I was supposed to be better by now, or this or that. And then one, they give up. And then they not only just give up on that, but then they give up on themselves, and then they stop trying to help them.
Yeah.
And so that's where these quick fixes are, because then it'll only just lead them to disappointment because it's not going to work. They're not going to see what they're looking for.
Right.
They might placebo effect themselves into it potentially, which, you know, hey, that's also beneficial too, right? If someone thinks it's helping so much so that it's enhancing their other normal healthy behaviors, then why not reinforce it, right? So at the same time, we always have to have a full perspective, and that's kind of one of the things we were talking about sort of off camera before, that sort of patient-centered approach, right? Like, what's the evidence base behind something? If it's good, if it's bad, how? What's the anecdotal evidence? What's someone's clinical experience like to then sort of provide advice or suggestions? And then how does that affect the person at hand the best, right? And so acclimating all of that into sort of helping them would obviously then change it, right? So if something is evidence-wise very, very, very poor or has massively conflicting research for it, but someone finds it really helpful, it gives them a placebo effect that enhances all their other stuff. You know, there's been times where I'll be like, hey, it's conflicting evidence, but if you find it beneficial, absolutely go for it, right? Because if it helps the person and it helps in other elements...
That's the objective here.
That's the objective, right? Yeah. It's just... That's the currency, right? It's just is help in person, and then therefore you earn their trust. And so it looks different from each individual, right? For maybe for Jonathan, a placebo effect works, and you know, we'll say, hey, keep going, we'll reinforce it. But maybe for you, in the context of you and your circumstances, hey, this isn't going to be a real good effect size for us. Let's maybe look at some other options here, right? So what is best for each individual always changes. Going back to what we said, because someone done something or took a supplement, it worked for them. Does it work for me? No.
When it comes to spray foam and blown-in insulation for your next project, there's no better team than Mohammed and his crew at Foamit. With well-educated, skilled installers, Foamit doesn't just get the job done, they do it right. They take the time to properly estimate and educate you on every aspect of your project, ensuring your building envelope is airtight and energy efficient. As leaders in the industry, they bring a deep understanding of building science to every job, making sure your project stands the test of time. But don't just take their word for it. Past clients constantly praise the quality of work and professionalism of the Foamit team. From homeowners to large-scale contractors, feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, with clients appreciating their attention to detail, the thoroughness of their crew, and the results that speak for themselves. At Foamit, they pride themselves on building lasting relationships through exceptional service, reliability, and the commitment to exceeding expectations on every single project. Whether you're insulating a new build, upgrading an older property, or tackling a commercial project, Foamit is your trusted partner in achieving energy efficiency and comfort. They understand the importance of getting it right the first time, and that's why so many clients return to them for future projects. Connect with Foamit today. Reach them at 416-893-8712 or 647-961-9777. Email them at mohammed@foamit.ca or visit them at www.foamit.ca. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn to see their latest projects and innovations. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Right. Let's talk about food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that what I've learned as you get older, portions are important. We can't eat what we used to eat when we were younger. I mean, we could scarf down as much as we wanted to, whether it was carbs or protein or whatever. But you're seeing a lot of people, mostly men, I would say, high protein. They're doing keto. They're doing all that, you know, fasting for 16 hours, not eating in the mornings, all that stuff. Are all these things good, bad, or should we be considering them?
So... Great question. The one beautiful thing about diet, regardless of the evidence for it, the one thing that we always see when we look at the evidence is what is sustainable for the individual, right? And in actuality, when we account for a lot of stuff, there is technically, unless it's for a patient population with certain parameters of medical underlying things, with certain... conditions, maybe some diet might be more beneficial for them. But when we look at people and population as a whole, the most important thing is what can they sustain over time, right? And every diet, to a large part, has a different mechanism in which induces a caloric deficit, right? And so that's kind of where it kind of comes from in terms of a healthy sort of manner, right? Managing your calories. So for the intermittent fasting, it's less restrictive to a degree other than just when you can eat, but you don't necessarily restrict foods. And so by nature, you'll just tendency to restrict your caloric intake. With vegans, you're going to eat more, you'll eat a high volume of very minimal calorically dense foods. And so your net will be obviously a caloric deficit, right? With keto, the sort of intention there is to minimize simple carbohydrates, which tend to be high in calories, right? So you minimize your caloric density foods, and thus you'll induce a caloric deficit, right?
Yeah.
At different sort of parameters, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we then sort of understand that and we look at, right, you know, what works best for the individual. If someone has a busy schedule, let's say in the mornings, they find it very difficult to eat breakfast. Fantastic. You know, hey, and there's other parameters in which they might feel it's very easy to sustain an intermittent fasting diet. That might be best for them, right? If someone feels like, you know what, hey, I like meat. I struggle with appetite because, you know, if I try certain restrictive foods and certain restricted diets, I'm not always satiated. So I feel hungry. So I find it very difficult. Yeah, maybe something where it's like high protein, more fiber, more vegetables that, you know, they'll find that very, very accommodating to them, yep. Right? So, and that's kind of a massive appealing sort of nature within those types of diets. So that's why you're starting to see this high protein. It's very nutrient dense as well. So it's beneficial on so many reasons, right? Other people might have personal choices or ethical choices to go with more of like a vegan option or maybe religious reasons for vegetarians, yep. Right? So it's, there's so many different
parameters. It goes parameters. Back to the individuals, right? Yeah, and yeah. You got to cause and effect, see what it does to your body.
Exactly.
Right?
And honestly, like I think one, I know there was a meta-analysis on mortality, which was pretty neat. And when looking at studies of beyond 10 years, sort of maintaining the diet, the Mediterranean diet showed to be quite effective, yep. More than the other ones, which, you know, it's almost a no-brainer, right? It's a effective a moderation diet. You're introducing all different elements. You're not overly restricting yourself, you know, so that age-old sort of rhetoric, you know, moderation, everything's okay to a large part. Yep. Not to say that Mediterranean is a moderation diet, but it's not really restrictive. It's about
You get your proteins, you get your omegas, yeah. You get your vegetables.
It's just,
you get
it, yeah. You want a very diverse diet, right? So, yeah.
And then I guess in the case of an injury, eating, what's the best way to, because obviously it depends on the severity of the injury, right? Mm-hmm. Most people don't want to eat at all.
Yeah, great question.
They want to rely on supplements, I guess, to kind of get back.
Well, it's yes. So I think there's two points to that question, right? Like pre-injury and then post-injury, right? So that recovery phase. So I'll probably maybe just start with the pre-injury. Yeah. So when someone, like, let's say, is awaiting, let's say, an ACL surgery, right? It's just a very common surgery. They're out of sport for a while. They're not active. So, you know, we're not going to be inducing muscle mass, right? Protein synthesis is going to be at a loss because it's only induced through protein ingestion or workouts, right? So now we have a significant loss, right? Yes, we're prehabbing stuff, but, you know, we're obviously limited by intensity because of the state that they're in. And so it's very, very imperative to try to minimize our muscle mass loss, right? So one of the most paramount things is that, and it's very hard to eat maybe as much as you were when someone's training, right? So it's very important that when we have our athletes in is that, right, is your protein ingestion sort of being maintained, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't want you to lose muscle mass as you head into surgery and then we're working through our rehab, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very, very, very imperative that we obviously monitor that, right? So, and which is hard too, right? For a lot of people, depending what their goals are and what their weight is, to get a certain amount of grams of protein, you hear different ratios, right? Whether it be like 0.8, 0.125, 1.5 of grams per kilo.
Yeah.
Could be very difficult depending too. If so, let's say someone only eats three times a day, twice a day, whatever it might be,
right.
That, hey, maybe then a protein supplement is going to be beneficial for them, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you come into the other half of it, as they then sort of come into rehab, right? How are they trying to do all these things to expedite their rehab to get back into sport or their everyday stuff? Yeah, then there's different supplements that we'll want to then sort of maintain or sort of monitor. Protein is still another one. Creatine is a massive one in different parameters, of course. But yeah, you know, beyond that, you know, supplements, you just kind of want to make sure you're getting everything you need to be, obviously predominantly through your diet first. And then if there's anything lacking, you know, with our nutritionists in clinic, we'll do different blood marker tests, biological marker tests to obviously evaluate that and then supplement accordingly, right? But for the most part, protein will be your lowest hanging fruit.
So just continue eating protein and just it'll help you rehabilitate. Basically.
Yeah, especially on like that athletic side. If I talk about that one, even the Gen Pop, right? Like within any injury or pre-surgery or surgery, you're going to want to attain and reattain your muscle mass as best as possible, right? Because if we're, let's say, pre-injury or pre-surgery, we're just absolutely losing muscle mass. Then when we have surgery, then we try to come back up. It's going to be a steeper climb than it should be otherwise if we're trying to control for certain things to make their recovery as easy and seamless as possible, right?
So the average day individual, they've seen you, they've overcome an injury or they're doing well and they want to continue doing that. They want to continue going up even though they're getting older. What can that individual do on a daily basis? So they wake up in the morning, what's the first thing they should consider doing regarding their physio, right? And then midday in the evening, how often should they be working out or kind of exploring exercise and physical activity, not walking, which is an activity-based thing. Like, I just want to kind of get a picture, a landscape of what these individuals should be.
Good question. So, It's hard to fully answer in a very specific sense because
I'm giving you a broad
human context.
Being that's like this tall, this short, this wide. Yeah.
So, but in short, one of the best things to sort of maximize your strength benefit is training a muscle group twice per week. Right. So at a relatively intense level. So whether we use RPE, so rate of perceived exertion, or just sort of a percentage of intensity, let's say one rep max.
What do you mean rate of perceived exertion?
So like, let's say if I'm working out and I think this is out of 10, it's an 8, right? Eight out of 10 difficulty.
Okay.
So it's just a subjective nature. It's a quick outcome measure to understand difficulty, right? It's not overly objective. It's just a very quick subjective one, right?
I think you should have a mirror right beside that machinery that you're using, just look at yourself, see if you're bullshitting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah, you know, are you seeing?
It feels like an 8.
This feels like an 8, man.
But usually, what you want to be doing is like understanding what is like your max, right? And then you kind of want to maybe go in a percentage of that. It gives you a better, truer, objective reflection. So I would say anywhere from like 70 to 80. Maybe you dip down to 60 if it's just been a chaotic week for you, right?
Okay.
And you want to be doing that muscle group twice per week. And then this is where I'll kind of then digress into understanding it's not necessarily muscle groups as it is movement patterns, because I always love the gym science of stuff. It's like back, biceps, mid-back, this, that, the other. And I'm like, you can't really isolate muscles as well as you think.
No, everyone,
right. Yeah.
It's all being.
Like I always say, like, okay, isolate one of your four quads, go for it. No shot, right? Your triceps, isolate only one. You can bias certain things, right? But it doesn't mean you're just solely using it, right?
No.
So training movement patterns tend to be a bit better as it especially relates to the upper body. It's a bit easier, a push based, a pull based. So if I was talking about the Gen Pop, I'd probably recommend that if there's no specific goal orientations or sport implications, right? So it's an easy way to do it where you can get your frequency in, your intensity in, and people tend to love it too because it's never really the same thing all that much, where it's like a push and a pull and a leg thing. Mm-hmm. And if you were to go like a push, a leg, a pull, day off, typically in that sort of time frame, yes, you'll get two workouts in an 8-day span, right? So you're really close to that 2 and 7, right? And so you'll kind of naturally see your best outcomes in that regard. And you can kind of play with it, right? A horizontal push, a vertical push, a horizontal pull, and a vertical pull, right? And you can kind of play around with it depending how you feel or what you've done the sort of session before, right? And so if you kind of work in that, you're always working the antagonists, so you can always keep your intensity high, right? So, you know, if you do a push, by the time you get to, you know, legs and then pull and then a day off and then back to push, you can, let's say, arguably go from anywhere from 60 to 80% intensity in that first one to likely the same in that second one, right? So, and then equally too, right? If you're doing push, the next day is legs. You're not really using your legs all that much unless you're doing combination stuff, but you know, if you try to separate it, then you can ensure your intensities are always high for each workout.
What about repetitions and sets? I mean, when we were younger, obviously we always did fewer sets and fewer repetitions, higher weight. But now you get older, it's the sets are almost staying the same. The repetitions are increasing, but the weight is decreasing, right?
So you actually want to flip it, right?
Flip it, really?
Yeah. So the way you would want to...
As you get older, you want to have more weight?
Yeah, well, you always want to have weight. That's the stimulus, right? That's the intensity of load, right? So, but again, now it has to be specific, right? So I'm not just to say, oh yeah, do heavy things for everything. No, right? So our more functional based stuff, right? So like, let's just say if we're taking a leg workout, for example, to apply some context here, and we're going to start one in a functional sense, so like a squat, right? So any form of weighted squat, you're going to want a higher intensity. Mm-hmm. And so we, for strength and hypertrophy, like muscle mass, growth size, right? We're going to want to hover around five. Like to do, if you can do more than five, you're not at, you're at a high intensity, right? So that means you got to up your weight, right? You got to be very conscious. You got to be honest with yourself. You can't ego lift because you'll hurt yourself, right? Okay, like if I'm, let's say a barbell or a goblet, I'm holding on to something if people don't like the barbell squat. And the weight is, you know, 50 pounds, let's say, whatever it might be. And I feel like, hey, five's tough. I'm really working. Fantastic. Mm. Stop there. Now you go five by five. And then the thing that people absolutely hate, which is kind of funny, is the rest. So the more intense it is, the more rest you need, right? Yeah. Neurologically speaking, right? So,
so you want to reduce that rest.
No, you actually want to increase it. So really? There's a lot of research on rest times and hypertrophy and strength. So obviously at the start of your stuff, right, in a very traditional sense. Now, again, not everyone might like this, but I'm talking about like for the best effective results, this is what you'd want to do. I work with a lot of people who absolutely hate resting. So I'm like, okay, superset it with something that's low intense so you can kind of still rest, but it sort of, you know, suffices for their mental state of like, I just can't sit still. Fantastic.
How long of a rest are we talking about?
3 minutes. You know, if you're doing something super intense, then you might need longer, right?
Really?
Yeah. Like
there's a benefit to that rest.
Absolutely, right? So there's a calcium uptake that sort of takes a bit of time, right? You're about 98% in, or 90% in about like a minute, right? So if you're trying to go quicker than that, which is to kind of go deeper into the physiological stuff, like one of the most important parts of a muscle contraction initiating, right? Neurologically speaking, you'll be neurologically gassed at that point, right? To produce a force contraction strong enough to lift a heavier weight, you're going to need time. Otherwise, well, one, you'll hurt yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Two is for the strength and hypertrophy gains, they're massive. So 3 minutes is ideal. 2 minutes is, you'll still see a good amount of stuff. 1 minute, you'll still see stuff, but they're statistically significant like differences, right? So, you know, what I do in the gym, I haven't worked out in a lot too much in the last couple of weeks, but, you know, like I'll single leg squat 225 pounds. I need 5 minutes of rest. Like I'm hanging out for a period of time, right? But then as I go through my workout, you know, the exercises get a bit more abstract, right? So it might be a smaller focal exercise. So your rest doesn't need to be as long because the intensity isn't as high.
But is it a time or is it your body's ready for the next set?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. So your body needs to be ready to recover. So you need that time, right? Okay. So the more time you, like if your exercise isn't as intense, then you don't need that time, mm-hmm. right? But if your exercise is intense, so it's all proportionate.
A home built on trust, crafted with care. Your home is more than just a structure. It's where memories are made, where your family grows, and where you find comfort. That's why your renovation or building project deserves nothing less than the utmost care and quality. Because it's not just about creating a space, it's about creating a place where life happens. Tim, the heart and soul behind Ravine View Construction, understands that your home is personal, and whether you want to be involved in every detail or prefer to leave it in the hands of a trusted expert, he and his team are here to make your vision a reality. At Ravine View Construction, every project is handled with the passion it deserves, from the initial site assessment to the final touches that turn a house into a home. Tim's team doesn't just build, they protect what matters most. With a reputation built on trust, excellence, and a commitment to using only the best materials, Ravine View Construction ensures that your home isn't just beautiful, it's built to last. Tim and his team work alongside the finest tradespeople, guiding you through every step so you always feel confident and cared for. Let them help you create a space where you can enjoy peace of mind and cherish moments with those you love for years to come. Connect with Ravine View Construction today at 416-671-0170 or visit them at www.rvchomes.ca. For direct inquiries, email Tim at info@rvchomes.ca. Let them build not just a house, but a home filled with lasting memories. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
right? And so, like, I'm not saying you have to go super intense, yeah, right, to the highest degree, like I said.
But the objective here is to push you to grow muscle, to get strength.
Exactly. To increase, like, you know, to increase your capacity, right? Now, people will have different desired levels of how they want to do that, right? Some, you know, some people really go for it, and they're kind of at that sort of upper level of really trying to go for it, maximum benefit, enhancement, etc. Some people, they're just sort of more comfortable, easygoing, kind of going through the motions a bit. That's fine too, right? We have to understand there's a scale here to it. So for some, that's why I said 60 to 80%. You want, sometimes you'll push 90, but as you're programming your stuff, right, you're going to kind of want to vary your intensities too, right? Particularly through your workout, right? So you're going to scale the intensity down because you're going to have less energy, right? So, you know, let's say you walk into the gym, you're feeling really good, you're basically coming in with 100% gas in the gas tank, right? You're going to do, you know, that the stuff at the front end of your workout are going to be intense. So you go like 90% of that. So 90 out of 100, you're going to be obviously fatigued, right? In a simplistic sense. Now you might go 80 out of 90, right? Then you go 70 of 80. But within relation to that, you're almost going like to the max, right? But you do have to scale down. So this is where within workouts, you're going to, the structuring and the programming is very meticulous that people don't necessarily know or think of too much. And it's why things can go sideways. Maybe they don't see the results as quickly. They might head into an injury. And so this is where, like, yeah, we want to make sure our programming is pretty tight.
So two things show up as you talk about this, right? Because we live in a quick fix society where we want to maximize our time and efficiencies. And again, I'm going to come to the word supplementation with two words, pre-workout and creatine. And when you talk about heavy duty load, reducing time in between, some folks will say, well, if I take pre-workout, I don't have to wait 3 minutes to recover. I can recover faster. Impacts, effects, what are your thoughts on pre-workout and creatine as supplementation too?
So I'll start with a pre-workout. So pre-workout, it's like a, it's a perceived level of energy, right?
Okay.
So like they feel like, oh, I got energy, I'm wired, I can go, right? They can hit a PR, a personal record or a personal best, right? Like I think I've done it once or twice just to try it. I was curious. You know, it doesn't mean that you have more strength. You just, you quite effectively feel like you have more energy. You're just kind of wired. So it's a perceived level of energy. So it doesn't mean that like you don't need the rest. You'll still need the rest. You'll just feel like you can keep going, which can be good if you're like, you know what, maybe you're in a sport setting or a competition setting for working out, but to do it habitually and as a sort of requirement for it, it will give you a false sense of strength or whatnot, right? So maybe let's say neurologically you're tired, maybe you shouldn't be pushing. That pre-workout might mask, so then you might have a bit of an injury, right? But it doesn't then necessarily mean just because you feel like you have the energy that you don't need the rest, right? The rest is for deeper physiological things that aren't being sort of, or they're, sorry, they're being disguised by now your perceived level of energy, but it doesn't mean the fatigue isn't there, right? So like, and there's a discrepancy too between muscle fatigue and then neuromuscular fatigue, right? Like we can test in clinic the difference of that, right? That I could show someone really quickly, like your nerves are tired, like you're done, but muscle mass or muscle wise, you'll be fine. And so there's a discrepancy there, right? So their perceived level of it, cognitively speaking, I got energy, doesn't mean that you're not tired.
Yeah.
So we need to be careful, right? So you can do it. I'd probably say like one, if you're feeling really tired and, you know, hey, maybe do it just to kind of get you through the workout, maybe go a bit more intense than what you might normally otherwise be. Requiring it is maybe something you might not want to be doing. Honestly, espresso coffee is pretty good. That's probably your best pre-workout, to be honest with you. But, you know, it does have its place for it. Some people absolutely love it. You know, go for it. But
I think people are relying too much on supplements these days. Yeah. And plus, when I start reading more and more about supplements, you got to find a good one to begin with, because a lot of people are adding fillers and creating bullshit supplements. Yeah. And then they mentally rely on it. They think that if they take this, consume it, and they're like supermen and women. And that's not the case.
And that's what I was saying, is like it just disguises it. Yeah. Right? And then we don't want to be reliant on it. And then worst case scenario, much, exactly like you touched on, then it starts to become a behavior and then a habit. And then now there's a dependency on it. And now they feel like, and people get into this a lot, you know, athletes, these younger athletic populations, which then sticks to them that they just get really quick into these anecdotal behaviors that, oh, I found this works, and then they just hang on to it. It's like the tightest belief they've ever had, and then they just stick with that throughout their entire life. And then it quickly comes from a habit to a behavior to just a necessity, right?
And then on the flip side, if they don't take it, they use that as an excuse why they're not feeling right on their game at that moment. Which is all, I think it's all bullshit.
Exactly. That's why I said, like, you know, time and place. Have this realistic, you know, perspective, right? Like, hey, it can be dosed in a sense where it could be beneficial, but understand it's not a dependency that's required, right? Go on.
This, you know, we talk about pre-workout. This struck a nerve because when, you know, have nephews that are in their 20s, but even coaching U18 athletes, the dependency, these athletes were dry scooping pre-workout, right? Literally scooping it before you're like, boys, you understand what you're doing, man? Like, I said, I'm not here to tell you what to do or what not to do, but that's got like 800 milligrams of or more, or somewhere 1,000 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah.
For, to your point, if I'm competing at, this is a championship game and this is going to amplify me, cool. When it becomes a dependency, it starts to set off for me. It was like, listen, folks, let's have a conversation about this because this is concerning. In addition to this, you're also having a Red Bull and these guys are drinking coffee. I'm like, holy shit, man, your nervous system is on overdrive. You're 18 years old today. You continue this for 5 years and 10 years. Like, you're just literally going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And those adrenal glands are going to be peaking all the time.
Yeah, and then obviously they... obviously, like we were saying, create a dependency on that, and then long-term health benefits, you know, less than ideal, for a lack of better words.
What about, I want to go back to the contractors and how I get a lot of them saying that I have a physical job, so I don't need to exercise, I don't need to stretch, I don't need to do it, I don't need to do any of this shit, which is all horse shit, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you could be driving a car for 10 hours straight, and that's your physical, but the thing is, if you try to do something else, sit down at a table and just write us something or whatever, you probably have difficulty doing that. So having a physical job doesn't eliminate the fact of having to be physical in different ways.
So the way, great question, and it's something that I see in clinic a lot, just with people in everyday life too, right, is that what that actually means, and again, to change the perspective a little bit, is that your requirement is higher than everyone else's that sit at a desk. So for you, it's even more imperative that you're working out at intensities beyond the general population who just sit at a desk, right? Their physical demands aren't that high, so they can maybe get away with doing less to a certain degree. But your physical demands is an exercise. I understand, like, it's a very physically challenging job. They're exhausted by it, right? But your exhaustion will become more enhanced if you're not making sure you're strong enough to be doing what your job requires you to do. So to give it in a metaphorical sense, if someone has an office job and they don't do too much, right, their requirements of math is just grade 8. And if someone does a construction job and it's very, very physically demanding, they got to lift heavy stuff, great, your mathematical demands is at a PhD level. So if you're not making sure you've done the necessary grades and education of math and different levels for it, and then you're making sure you're practicing at that level, you're going to hurt yourself, right? So it just means that you're operating at a higher level than everyone else. But just because you're in a PhD level of math doesn't mean you stop doing math, right?
No, I agree.
It just then means it's more imperative that you make sure you're honing your math skills really sharply, because the demands in which you have to operate under are much more challenging than everyone else's, right? So it becomes then understanding, just because you're doing that doesn't mean you're doing, you know, workouts, right? You're doing a very task specific, heavy induced movement X amount of times potentially, right? But then it's only a one specific task movement. Yep. It doesn't mean it's a global thing, right? It doesn't mean you're working at different parts of your body, right? If you're lifting one thing in a very specific movement pattern, you're very good at that one very specific movement pattern, but everything else is horrid. And so now it's even, you're going to hurt yourself even more. And so
doing that as a compound, and as you get older, you're just going to create more problems on other parts of the body.
Because if you're not making sure you're strong enough, you're effectively getting weaker over time. So now think of it as, like, you have to do a university level algebra test all the time, but never practice math.
I'd love for you to just, as we get close to wrapping up, I'd love for you to just kind of give me a yes or no and one reason behind it. If this is a good or bad thing, right? Because I'm seeing an increase in energy drinks in construction workers? Reliant on energy drinks. Are energy drinks good or bad?
So not great, right? Like typically they're going to have high amounts of caffeine. For reference, espresso has typically around 80 milligrams. Some of these can have north of 130, 140. Some can have 200, right? Levels of sugar, if they don't go sugar-free, there's just a whole bunch of other additives in them too. So not ideal, right? And again, for some, it's just like, well, they'll say, oh, it's my coffee version. Yeah, but how many are you consuming, right?
Day. It's not a one in time in the morning. It's like a constant, there's empty cans everywhere.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so, you know, and it'll affect their sleep too. When are they taking their last sort of energy drink too, right? To understand that caffeine that will be in your system for a significant amount of time, right? So, you know, and then that amount too, like that's really, really intense. And then not to mention too is that when you are ingesting caffeine, you also want to make sure that you're waiting a bit of time too, right? Just because caffeine will fight with a lot of other receptors, that when that wears off, you're going to have this crash. Then you're going to have another feeling that you need to have another one. And so that'll be like mid-afternoon or late afternoon. And then that's in your system till in the evening. And then with construction, the time that they work at, early morning, they got to go to bed early. So you're still having that caffeine in your system. It'll disrupt your sleep. You wake up the next day, you're feeling tired. I need an energy drink.
Because you haven't slept.
Because you haven't slept properly, right? And so, you know, if you're doing all the simple things properly, you'll be fine in terms of feeling good, sleeping right, eating right, exercising right, right? So, and these are the simple things. You have to cultivate it however it works best in your schedule, right? And then if you're having that in check and you're being relatively disciplined with that, you won't have the necessity to have these energy drinks that aren't good for you, right? And maybe if you have one, cool, like that might be your guilty pleasure. You know, there's worse things that you can be trying to do for, you know, as a guilty pleasure, right? So one a day, if that's fine, you know, less than ideal, but, you know, it's not going to massively impact you too much. But if you start compounding that and then extending it later in the day, you're going
to
have...
Then we go back to the dependency part of it.
Exactly.
Which is not a good idea. Sleep-wise, man or woman, I guess, how many hours of sleep should we be looking at?
So... You ideally, again, it's so interdependent too, but you would want to strive for 8 in an ideal world.
8 ideal sleeping hours.
Yeah.
Not you on the phone right before the bed, turning it over and then go to sleep and then wake up in the morning, go to the phone.
Yeah.
That's not 8 ideal hours.
Yeah. There's a couple of habits that sort of gets confined as like sleep hygiene, right? So blue light, being on your phone, you know, any high forms of stimulus right before bed, or even, to be honest with you, like 2 hours before bed, caffeine consumption before bed, exercise right before bed, not ideal as well. So, you know, kind of these different things too. But then understanding as well that there's so many things that can affect sleep too, right? So like anger, anxiety, stress, things like that, mm-hmm. right? That, you know, will massively impact your quality of sleep, your sleep onset. So,
is it good to have a kiwi or a couple of kiwis before you go to sleep?
Yeah, that's kind of like floated around with the serotonin.
I read bits some of kiwi. That.
Yeah.
It helps you sleep.
Listen, it can, in theory, just with these sort of levels of serotonin that it has, but it doesn't necessarily mean you will sleep, right? It's not a cause and effect. So, you know, it's not like you can be undisciplined in some of your sleep hygiene and take a kiwi, you fall asleep. It's not a... you know, cover up.
Doesn't that work that way?
No, it really doesn't. Yeah. Much like everything, to be honest, right? So, but you kind of want to avoid those things, right? 8 hours is great. Like people, you can still do 6, still not ideal. One of the most paramount things, I think, with sleep that they don't really understand is how that affects their immune system, mm-hmm. right? So, a lot of it too is like a lot of your killer T cells and things like that they drop significantly with minimal amounts of sleep, right? So it's very, very paramount to get sleep. Obviously, again, it's going to be so different because in a spectrum scale, right? People have different requirements, demand schedules, impeding circumstances, right? But in an ideal world, 8 hours, you know, 7's great, you know, still good, but not great. 6, you know, hey, we're flirting with some stuff, but if you can try to get 7, that'll be better for you. You'll still be able to function. When you're younger, you can definitely get away with it. I think we all did and realize that. But as we get older, we realize we can't, right? Yep, and it'll highly affect how we feel the next day.
Consider Expert Plumbing and Drains. When it comes to plumbing, you need someone who's not just skilled, but truly cares about the job they do. Someone like Aaron Bolin and his team at Expert Plumbing and Drains. Aaron has been in the trade for years, and he's built his reputation on one thing, commitment. Commitment to his craft, his crew, and most importantly to you, the client. At Expert Plumbing and Drains, it's not just fixing pipes, it's about delivering the best possible service every single time on every single project. So whether you're dealing with a leaky faucet, a stubborn drain, or planning a full plumbing overhaul, Aaron and his team are ready to tackle it all with skill, integrity, and a passion for excellence. Need help now? Call Expert Plumbing and Drains at 905-531-4111. That's 905-531-4111. Or visit them at www.expertplumbinganddrains.com and on social media at Expert Plumbing and Drains Canada. Experience the difference of working with a team that's dedicated to getting the job done right. Because at Expert Plumbing and Drains, your satisfaction is their top priority. You can also email Aaron directly at aaron@expertplumbinganddrains.com. Expert Plumbing and Drains, where expertise meets care. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Carbs or no carbs? You got a lot of guys going, I don't want to touch carbs at all. No bread, no pasta, yeah. Nothing, right?
Great question. Again, it comes down to the simplicity of, like, carbs tend to be high in calories, right? So if we minimize their caloric intake of high calorie foods, it's going to be easy for them to kind of get their weight under control, right? But again, too, like, I'll even change that perspective, too, is that we always fixate, and this is one thing I tell people, there's a relationship between diet and exercise.
Yeah.
If I were to tell you there's two parts to this, and if we focus solely 100% on 50% of the solution, would that seem foolish?
It's 100% foolish, yeah.
So if we have to induce a caloric deficit in a two-way relationship of, can I expend 500 calories through exercise or activity or however we can do it? And then also to the flip coin is then, ingest less 500, so net 1,000 calories less, right? If I just solely try to get that caloric drop or deficit from just diet alone in 1,000 calories, that's pretty difficult, pretty restrictive. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to sustain that for very long, right? So we have to understand it's twofold, and to dedicate, which it's easier, it's less impeding in our day-to-day just to focus and change our eating behaviors. I get that. But to focus 100% of 50% of that sort of...
is wrong.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It won't give you the results that you're looking for.
Yeah, and how people change in terms of their results from doing all these things is different too, right? It's not like people say, well, it's not just one thing. Absolutely, right? There's different other factors too that it's the never the same thing for everyone, right? So, but doing those things, you'll eventually see what you want to see. You'll experience what you want to experience, but it might not be the same sort of speed in which that occurs for everyone.
Your patients, when they come in, are they resistant to what you're trying to tell them, even though that you've understood how this body works a lot better than they do?
Yeah.
Even though it's their body.
Yeah, great question.
Because I could see that happening. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I know my body. When I wake up in the morning, this is what happens.
And so this
is like, throw out all that phlegm, and I have my cigar, and I have my glass of wine. I'm ready to rock and roll and go to work, right?
Yeah. So it's a great question. And to be even more transparent, that is the toughest part about my job, right?
To understand the person, right?
Not to understand it, is to kind of get them to be willing to help themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, as I sort of answer that question, I also equally have to be fully understanding that I can't change you.
Nope.
All I can do is assist you. So I am upfront about that, is that, like, if you're looking for me to perform a miracle, I can't do it. No one else can. If they're promising you that, run. Two is that you have to score the goal. I can only assist you. Mm. So I be fully transparent. I give you a full expectation of that outcome. And then two is, like, when we discussed it the last time I was on, is like, I need to understand. So I'm going to ask a ton of questions. I need to understand the individual. I'm not just treating a shoulder, a hip, or a knee. I'm treating the person. And so there's so many implications that make that sort of individual case or person challenging, right? As they come from a place of vulnerability, of pain, how that pain or injury implicates their ability to make an income potentially, right? And so can I then understand the person, understand what they're struggling with, and then communicate to them, hey, make this make sense for you, right? So I'll take all of their symptoms, what they're explaining to me that they're having troubles with, and then tell them why, right? Not that I'm selling them anything. I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm just going to tell it to you straight. You can use it in a realistic expectation. Here's the outcome. Here's what you can anticipate some frustrations to arise based off of certain behaviors, right? Based off of your maybe demands, right? Maybe someone has a foot pain and they have to be on their feet for like 12 hours a day. Hey, this is going to take a really long time, right? Like, you're probably not going to see a drop in symptoms for maybe more because, well, you're on your feet for 12 hours a day. So this is going to take a bit longer, right? And I'll have to kind of reinstill that sort of concept to them that, hey, you know, it might hurt now after 2 hours. Great. And now it might hurt after like 3.5, but it's still going to hurt that same 8 out of 10. But you have to understand that this discrepancy between symptoms or pain and your functional tolerance are different, right? So the subjective versus the objective nature and progress, right? And explain it to them. And then if I can explain it to them where at the end of the day, they don't have questions, which is what I strive to do, and I take time in that first session, then they'll be like, okay, I understand. And so, yes, I don't know them as well as they know themselves, but like know the clinical expertise to then make it make sense in relation to them.
Yeah.
And so then they can relate, right? And then they'll understand. And then like, okay, like, right, this is what's going to help me. Here's my problem. He seems to have a plan in place that he's communicated to me to help me with that in specific. And then in the masses, I typically don't have an issue at all.
I just got one more question before we wrap up. You got anything else?
No, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Did you want to chat about the creatine bit?
Sure, you can touch about creatine. I mean, I think
it's part of the supplement world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just because like, it was like specific to the concussion stuff and the cognitive stuff, I think.
Yeah, talk about creatine. I mean, there's a misconception, I think, about creatine. I know that in your early 20s, it's like this is great for muscle mass and
growth. Well, I loved creatine when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like balloon, man.
Yeah,
so creatine just it hangs on to water, doesn't it?
No, so that's like one of the kind of narratives and rhetorics that just stick to it, sort of creatine, as it's kind of been around for so long, and we quickly believe that to be true when we're younger, as it gets passed down sort of from age category to the younger generation, and as it's common practice in sort of the gym world. More specifically, like, it has like really good neurocognitive implications, right? It doesn't help with memory, but it does help, one, with people in concussion states, two, for people with various like sort of like TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. It has shown effect there in terms of improvement. And so it's one of these things where, and I'll just talk about in concussion sense, so in clinic, we have a lot of people on it. It just helps massively to resolve symptoms, to help them get going quicker. Mm-hmm. It's a really good neurocognitive benefit too, in a sense of not necessarily for memory. It's been conflicting results there, but like for like higher process decision-making, it's shown to have
really
a benefit as well. Yeah, absolutely. Not that you need to dose it more than what's sort of the standard. But in terms of concussion-based stuff, that with a concussion, it's a minor TBI, traumatic brain injury, and so there's a dysregulation of energy, right? And so creatine is obviously something that can cross the blood-brain barrier and is used for quick synapses energy. And so when there's a dysregulation, this helps with that and sort of helps to curb symptoms when people are on it. It helps to have some form of a minor neuroprotective benefit too with it. So in a neurocognitive sense, like, I highly recommend it. It's one of the most safest and researched supplements out there. Creatine monohydrate is the best form of it. There isn't a massive amount of routine implications for it, when to take it, how much. 5 milligrams tends to be the best. You don't have to overdo it and take more than that. You don't have to cycle it. There is some suggestions with it in terms of taking it with caffeine intake, as it kind of conflicts or curbs its effect size. Again, conflicting, so it's not conclusive. So it's just pretty easy to stay away from caffeine ingestion with it. So for myself, I take
it. Drinking it before it or something.
Yeah, before or after, to be honest, right? So one thing I always say, like, that it's just the easiest time is at night, right before bed. Like,
to take the creatine?
Yeah, because you're not going to have coffee before you go to bed. You're not going to have coffee till probably you wake up, mm-hmm. right? So it's just one way to sort of ensure that. It doesn't mean you have to take it before bed. That's what I do. it's just really easy because I drink a lot of coffee throughout
the
day.
So what was I seeing? Like when I would take it, I would get massive muscle gains. Like I would get massive size from it.
Yeah, because you're also working out too, right? Yeah. So will it have like, it's not the same for everyone. What it does in a physiological sense is it puts more creatine, creatine kinase in your muscle, right? So you're just using that as an energy source. So from that performance aspect, one, you're using in a very specific workout parameter, right? So more high intensity, slightly longer durations, you're using creatine kinase is a energy source, right? ADP. And so if we have a higher residual baseline, you're gonna be able to perform better. And so you naturally will, as that kind of uptakes in your muscle a bit more, yes, you can see a larger muscle mass size, right? But it's also in conjunction with everything else you're doing, right? It's not just, hey, Gen Pop, just taking it on a sort of micro dose or average dose or continuous dose that you're gonna see the same result and just balloon out. No, that's not necessarily the case.
I'm gonna try the night before the sleeping. I'm gonna try that.
Yeah, so like that's what I do. And I find it super helpful within the intensity of my workout. So when you work out, right, you're gonna use it as an energy source. It's gonna kind of, you know, deplete in within the muscle in terms of your reserves. If you're starting from a higher baseline, you'll have a much bigger tolerance. The recovery from workout to workout, as it takes time to recover, full recovery, it's about 72 hours depending. On average, you'll see majority of it sort of regained within 48 hours. Obviously, differentiating and depending on the workouts and intensities, but this will help to supplement that and curb that a bit quicker, right? So if someone has a higher volume of training within a frequency of a week, it's a low-hanging fruit.
Sure. Last thing I want to ask you, is there basically a bridge between your mental and how you are doing mentally affecting your physical and how you are doing physically and affecting your mental?
Yeah, great question. So the paramount amount of research, and I'll start from physical to mental and then I'll go mental to physical, of exercise on mental health, it's massive in terms of its effect, right? In your tolerance within mood, helping you with sleep thereafter, right? So a lot of with mental issues too is that it'll disrupt sleep. And so exercise on its effect with sleep and then how that then sort of affects sort of someone's mental state within that, right? Massively helps it too. So it's super, super paramount that someone's actively exercising. Now, to the flip coin is that if someone's struggling with mental health or some sort of form of issue with what's going on, is that, yes, that's going to have a massive effect in energy, moods, motivation, if you will, to then exercise, to then get that effect on their mental health, right? So it's... that's where we talk about, you know, hey, just small steps, building small steps. If someone's coming from a place of, okay, mental to physical, can I go from building these small steps, right, understanding what their barriers are, to eventually getting them to do something and then compounding that to then build a habit, right? So it takes about, on average, 21 days to build a habit. So long as you can kind of get there, work with them with whatever might be a barrier to try to minimize those, to build a habit, and then obviously try to get them going more to then see the rebound benefit on their mental health.
So basically the gyms start to get quiet around the third week of January then.
Yeah. Yeah. Motivation and discipline are two different things.
Right. Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Anything else you want to share, Jonathan, before we wrap great. It up?
No, thank you.
Yeah. Man. No, this has been a good, it's always an educational list, but I mean, and I'm always learning shit, so.
Likewise, man. Never stop learning.
Same thing. So thank you so much, Roberto. Thank you. Premier Physiotherapy and Sports Medicine. You can reach him at www.premierphysiotherapy.com, Roberto at premierphysiotherapy.com, and on IG under, it's under premier.physiotherapy.
That's correct. Or premier.physio.
Premier.physio.
Yeah.
Oh, physio. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And 905-417-9991. And then people first. What's the details again, Jonathan?
JC at Jonathan Sinelli. Telephones 416-717-4139. Peoplefirstleadership.ca. You'll connect with me.
That's it. Thanks, guys.
Man. Perfect. Appreciate it. Thank you.
We're out of here.